90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City, Community Radio. Streaming online at www.kkfi.org.
The views and opinions of this program are those of its host and guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of 90.1 FM, KKFI, Midcoast Radio Project, or its staff and volunteers.
Welcome to Cowtown Conversations. I'm your host, Joseph Daxson. Today we're going to do our second installment in our series on wills, beneficiary deeds, life insurance, funerals, and trust. And our guest today is David Whalen, a financial planner. Mr. Whalen, are you here? Welcome. Good morning. Welcome to Cowtown Conversations.
Good morning. I am here. How are you?
I'm doing well.
Good.
Can you tell listeners a little bit about yourself?
Well, I'm a hometown product. I was born and raised here. My family had a transportation business here for about 52 years. Went to Purcell High School, went to Lincoln University. Sorry about that. I'm at my office. I'm an engineer. Went to Michigan and became an engineer and then came on back home and actually was an entrepreneur for a long period of time into real estate and doing those kind of things. And then I got into the marketing and then into the banking business. I was a banker for about 8 years at Central Bank of Kansas City. And then I left there and became a financial advisor with Ameriprise Financial. And I've been a financial advisor for just a little bit under 12 years. And so for the last 20 years, I've been in the financial area, and my passion has always been to help people be able to make good financial decisions. Whatever is affecting you financially, that's what we get involved in. And, of course, insurance is a big part of your finance. And so it's just one element of saving money, getting out of debt, manage your money properly, but insurance is the true protection, and it is its purpose is to transfer risk from you to the insurance company.
So when we talk about life insurance and we're transferring that risk, what can that policy be used for a family or for a single person?
Well, everything really depends on your situation. If you're a single person, whether you are a married couple, if you're a married couple with children, married couple with no children, the purpose of insurance is really to determine what it is that you're trying to protect. So, in fact, if you're a single person, your protection may be just to cover the house you just purchased, or it may just be to cover burial plans or burial expenses. But if you are a couple and you have children, or if you're single and you have children, the real purpose of insurance then transfers to being able to provide the same level of lifestyle to those people that you love after you're gone. A lot of people don't realize that what we call the terminology that we use in the business is called human life value. Human life value means when somebody is a husband and wife or single with kids, it means that income that you bring home, it means that benefits that cover the you and the children, it means protecting what you don't want to lose, which means the lifestyle. If you have younger children, and let's say they're 4, 5, 6, they don't really become adults till they're 18 to 21. So if you were not around, the question would be, how would that person, how would those children continue to live in the same lifestyle that they have been used to based on your income, benefits, where you live at, those kind of things. So when you're looking at insurance, the analysis to how much you really need is really the key to the whole thing. And everybody is different. Everybody's needs are different. So that needs analysis, providing the minimum coverage for your beneficiary, those are really the keys to meet day-to-day living expenses.
How much should a person have in life insurance? I know there's some rule of thumb that say you need to have seven times your annual income, 10 times your annual income. How much should a person have in life insurance?
Well, let me begin with this. Life insurance, basically the underwriting policy, the younger you are and the healthier you are, then the premium is going to be a lot less. The older you are, and if you don't have such good health, the more expensive it's going to be. So when we talk about rules of thumb, there is not necessarily, in my opinion, a straight rule of thumb that says you need seven times whatever your salary is. It depends on what you're trying to protect and at what stage of your life. If you are younger and you, as I said before, if you're not married, you probably will not need as much. But if you are married, have children, want to make sure that they have the lifestyle that they would be used to if you were alive, then that difference based on what it is you're trying to protect. So let me give you an example. If I was a married couple and I had two kids and they were 4, 5, and 6, and let's say that my annual salary was $50,000 a year, you not only bring the salary of $50,000 a year, but the benefits as well. So let's say, for example, you got coverage for $200,000. Well, if you just think about that, $200,000 based on your salary and benefits is really just going to cover 4 years of somebody. If you were bringing in $50,000 and you have coverage of $200,000, just think about that. You know, $50,000 for the next 4 years would amount to $200,000. So if you want more than that, let's say, you know, $500,000, then you have to look and see how long it will last, what will it provide for. If you have a house and you want that house paid off and the house is worth a couple of $100,000, you may need $500,000 worth of coverage, because that means that your wife or your spouse can pay off the house and still have $300,000 left to be able to provide that human life value for herself and the kids. However, don't forget that you're taking on more expenses as well. Just because you bring home a salary, human life value covers more than just your salary and benefits. It covers lifestyle and expenses that you all might have had going on up until this period of time. So there is, Joseph, to really get to it, it takes a needs analysis to find out really what somebody, really what the adequate coverage would be, what the right amount would be. And that's what really, I believe, takes a professional. You know, everybody gets approached by an insurance person. And they say, well, you need insurance. You need this, you need that. But you have to take the time to do a needs analysis to find out what would be covered in case something happened to you prematurely. What would the insurance cover? By the way, insurance payouts are tax-free. So they come tax-free to the beneficiaries in terms of that. So that is a good thing, and that's a fact that people need to take into consideration, that they will not be taxed on the amount of money that they would receive if something were to happen to one spouse or another.
When you have a husband and wife combination, and today we're dealing with dual family incomes, usually they look at putting more money on the breadwinner, which is in most cases the husband. But when we go to insure the wife, how much should we look at insurance for the wife? Because a lot of things that the wife does that people are going to have to hire somebody to do, they take care of the children, they pick them up, they take them to school, they do all those different things. And that's something that people forget about. So how important is that to factor in when you look at insurance on a spouse?
So very important. Again, that is their human life value. I never assume that the wife is not going to be producing income as well. So my rule of thumb normally is to insure both husband and wife based on the same amount. So if the husband requires $500,000, I would put $500,000 on the wife, because as you just said, if nobody knows who's going to go first. That's the whole thing, is that I don't assume that the wife is going to outlive the husband, and the husband is going to outlive the wife. I've had clients over the last 2 years that most people thought the husband would have gone first, and in all three of the cases, the wife went before the husband. So I never assume who's going first. The point is that it doesn't really make any difference. You should look at the needs analysis based on if it was one person surviving or neither one surviving. Most people don't think about husband and wife could be out driving around and get into a car accident and having helped the family both perish in a car accident, which means if they have children remaining, then those kids now have to live life without both parents. Sometimes husband and wife fly together. Sometimes whole families fly together. Some people, I've had clients, Joseph, believe it or not, that the husband and wife will not fly together just because they have kids and they want to make sure that if something happens to one or the other, that there will be a surviving parent. All of this is based on a needs analysis to really get in and look at how much coverage do you need. You don't need to be underinsured, and you don't need to be overinsured. What you need to be is adequately insured based on your age, your age, your health, and what it is that you're trying to protect or what it is that you want to insure, that down the road, if you will not hear that the people that you leave behind, the people that you love, will be able to adequately continue on with their life. And by the way, for most people, they have this feeling that if I get life insurance, I'm not going to benefit. You are absolutely right. You will not necessarily benefit, but that's not what insurance is for. It is for those people who you love that would be left behind if, heaven forbid, that you transition. And so that's exactly, we have to be clear about that with insurance. That's what it's for.
One of those things, as you were just briefly talking about the families, and as we think about the tragedy that happened in Branson with the duck boats, where there were eight people from the same family that perished in that situation, and it was only one sole survivor, and that was the wife. You know, so it doesn't have to be you flying in a plane. It doesn't have to be you driving a car. They were on vacation. They were there for vacation and make memories, and the memories turned into a tragedy.
Yes, yeah. And you know what? That's an extreme case, but it goes to the point of none of us ever know what may or may not happen. That's the mystery of life. We don't know. The point about, particularly about insurance, is that it would cover a situation that would happen unexpectedly. That's what it's there for. However, I have this little joke that I tell people that none of us are going to get out of here alive. So a lot of times people believe that they're not going to transition or pass away. That's a falsehood. All of us in some way or some form or fashion, whether old age or by accident or by sickness or illness, will transition at some point in time. The question is, are you covered before any of those situations happen? And I'd like to always compare life insurance to car insurance in this perspective. We carry car insurance because we don't know whether we're going to have an accident or not. But if we do have an accident, then we're covered. And the other person's car is covered, right? So this is the same way with life insurance. It's important. It's not one of those situations that you should put off. You should explore. You should get with a professional. You should do a needs analysis. Do I need insurance? At what level do I need? And what type of coverage do I need? All of those things are important, as well as can I pay the premium? And so part of this is a puzzle that can be put together very easily, explained very easily, with a person, with a couple, with a single person with children, a person that is thinking about, you know, the people that will be left behind if they were not around. It's just one of those things that we should not be afraid of, and it's just something that we should be, you can be a little bit uncomfortable, but the fact of the matter is, I've always found, Joseph, when we take care of business, when we do the things that we're supposed to do, you do it one time and then it's pretty much over. You don't have to continue to buy insurance or anything like that. You have to revisit it on an annual basis and make sure that you are continue to be covered, because people buy assets, they sell assets, they have no children today, they may have two children the next year. Who knows? But that's what insurance is for. Is for us to do our due diligence and cover those people who are left behind.
When we talk about life insurance, one of the things we hear a word is the life insurance beneficiary. What is the life insurance beneficiary?
The life insurance beneficiary, or any beneficiary, whether it be on your 401k, or whether it be on any investments or bank account, a beneficiary is that person that you have designated that you want to receive the proceeds, in this particular case, from a life insurance policy. It is very, very important, as I said before, that you revisit on an annual basis who these beneficiaries are, how your insurance policy is doing, because sometimes we get married, sometimes we get divorced, sometimes people are left on the beneficiary policy that you might change your mind about. They may not be the person that you want to leave the money to. By the way, if you have a child that's under 18 years old, that person would have to have a guardian. But once they reach 18 years of age, they would become the full-fledged beneficiary. So you always have to revisit these things. It's not something that you can set and forget. You have to come back to this on an annual basis. That's your due diligence, that you look at it, make sure that the person that you want to be that beneficiary or the recipient of these tax-free dollars, if that is the person that you want to continue to be the recipient or beneficiary.
What happens?
The beneficiary is just simply the person that receives the money.
What happens if the beneficiary dies before the insurer dies?
Normally what happens is you can assign a successor, and if that beneficiary dies before you do, you can always assign another beneficiary. Some policies allow you to assign a successor to that beneficiary, that primary beneficiary. If something were to happen to them, then the successor would step up after the transition of the primary beneficiary.
So if, going back to that tragic example, so when that other couple, there were other couples on there that passed away, the husband and wife, if they had listed each other as their own, as their other beneficiaries, then it's a situation now where that money most likely goes into the estate, into probate. And then now they have to figure out who is the beneficiary if, say, the husband listed the wife and the wife listed the husband.
Right. And then each state, like the state of Missouri, they have a designated beneficiary list in case somebody dies without a will, without a trust, those kind of things. So, for example, some of those family members that passed away, if they, the husband and wife, if each one was the beneficiary of each one, then they would go down the list, which would be their kids, would be, if they didn't have any kids, if they had any living parents, would probably come next. And then you get into step kids, cousins, uncles, grandparents, they have a list. A set list, a statutory list, that those people would be next in line based on whether or not the couple had passed away, whether they had each other as a beneficiary. Now, some couples, for example, list their kids as a beneficiary. Thinking they are of age, they might have changed it. That's why it's important as you get older and as circumstances change, that's why you need to, on an annual basis, just to review it, say, okay, these are the people I want as a beneficiary. I'm okay with it. Continue on. And it's real simple to change beneficiaries, by the way. All you have to do is ask the insurance company for a change of beneficiary form. They will send one right out to you. You can make the change. Then the last document with the latest date is the one that they will officially use.
When you name beneficiaries, why should you be specific instead of saying my children, list their names and their social security numbers and their addresses? Because you may want to leave money to maybe one child, or one child may be left out. But if you say my children, then all of them get it. But if you list the children, then it's shared among those in which you list, right or wrong.
You have the option to do either or. Sometimes people say any surviving children share equally. Some people say, you know, I have four kids, but I feel more strongly about the first one, so I'm going to leave them 50%, and I'm going to leave I'll leave the other three equally divided, the remaining 50%. You have some that say, I want one child to have 80%, and, you know, I got one other child, and I just want them to have 20%. That is the option of the insured of who and how they want the proceeds to be split up. Some people don't even leave it to their children. Some people leave some to their children. They leave the rest to their grandchildren. Some people skip over their children and leave the remaining amount to their grandchildren. Some people list their church. That is your option to determine who you want the beneficiary to be of those proceeds. So you have the option. You don't have to leave it to kids. You can leave it to whoever you want to.
As we talk about life insurance, there's four different types that we want to briefly discuss. You have term life insurance, whole life insurance, universal life insurance, and guarantee issue life insurance. What is term life insurance?
Well, term life insurance and the three are the basics, the three are term, whole life, and variable universal life. The term life insurance really speaks to the fact that term is just as it says. It's for a definite period of time. You do have term has the option that it can be converted to what we call permanent coverage. And permanent coverage is usually the whole life or variable universal life. And the death benefit payment, of course, normally is to protect that person's income and help maintaining the expenses ongoing. Now, with term, what you're going to get is, if I want it for 10 years, 20 years, or 30 years, that's how long the insurance is going to last. And after that, the premium is going to go up. It also does not have any investment component, as currently on the other two. The whole life and the variable universal life will have some investment component. So most insurance have these two components, death benefit and investment component. Term just has the death benefit. Whole life has the death benefit, and it has an investment component. The investment component has a fixed return. It could be 1%, 2%, or 3% that the insurance company is saying that they will pay you back. So you have the death benefit and you have the fixed return on whole life. And then you have universal life. Universal life says you have the death benefit, and then you have the investment. The difference is that the investment could go as high as the market goes. It does not have a cap on it. So you have death benefit, and you have unlimited return on the variable universal life. Now, in my business, in my world, Joseph, on those three, most of the time what happens is, depending on the level of the your license coverage or your license, determines what you can sell. So, for example, with me, I can sell anything because I'm licensed to sell anything. Whereas with most companies, let's say Allstate or whatever, car insurance people, they're only able to sell you term and a whole life because they are not licensed to sell universal life. So your license level depends on what you're able to sell to a particular customer in terms of that. So now, this guaranteed insurance, I'm not familiar with. You might, I don't know where you got that from. Guaranteed to me means that it pays out a certain amount, but you may have some definition of what guarantee is. I'm not familiar with
it. It's insurance that you see advertised and marketed for, say, those that are on TV, seniors, that they guarantee that you can get a policy, but the premiums for that policy policy may be higher. But it's also going to have a certain defined benefit. That's it. Say it's a $10,000 policy. You may be paying $100 a month for it, and then but you may be buying it when you're 72 and kind of things from there.
Right. So don't forget what I began with. Even on those guarantees, see, that is would be, if I was doing a needs analysis, most of those the people that they are trying to accumulate or trying to take advantage of that advertising is somebody that is older, number one, is past 65 years old. Number two, they probably don't have a burial plan. And so that amount of money, $10,000, is probably just enough to be able to bury you. And so most of the time, that's what they are targeting, people that are concerned about, how would my spouse, or I don't have a spouse, how would I get buried? And so that guaranteed amount or the amount that they're saying that they would provide for, that's what they're talking about. That's who that is targeting. However, with term whole life and variable universal life, of course, the death benefit would be higher. You've been paying for it for a period of time. And so in most cases, those premiums on those guarantees, they're going to be pretty high because the person is older and they may not have good health. Don't forget that insurance is always based on your age and your health condition.
We're going to have to take a short break. You're listening to Cowtown Conversations on 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City's community radio station. I'm your host, Joseph Jackson, and our guest today is David Whalen, who's a financial planner from Ameriprise, and we're talking about life insurance. Stay tuned. We'll be right back after this short break. And we're back. This is Joseph Jackson, host of Cowtown Conversations, and our guest today is David Whalen, certified financial planner from Ameriprise. So, David, as we were talking about term life insurance, there are two types of term life insurance, level term and decreasing term. What's the difference in between the two?
Well, level term means that you continue to pay that amount for the life of the term. Decreasing is normally associated with let's say that you want to pay a house off. It's a type of insurance that is associated with something that is decreasing, like a mortgage. If you have a decreasing coverage on the insurance, it means that the lower that the value of the house is, it's really just protecting being able to pay that amount off. So if you started at $100,000 and then the mortgage decreased down to 75 or 50 and then something would happen to that person, it would pay off that amount that it is at that point in time. Term is you have so many types of insurance depending on your focus and your purpose. You know, warranties is a form of insurance. People buy warranties all the time for TVs, for appliances, for things that happen in the home. All of these things come up under the title of insurance. But what I find most important is life insurance. So sticking with those three things, everything else to me is outside of life insurance. You can have insurance, homeowner's insurance for your house. You can have car insurance. You can have, like I said, all kind of warranties to warrant against defects or stuff going out. You know, you got warranties. You got insurance to cover sewer lines to your house. You got all kind of insurance. That's why I always tell people, be sure that you do a needs analysis on what you really are trying to insure and protect, because some of this can get excessive. To me, the three levels of life insurance are the most important and the highest priority that somebody should look at first and then proceed to the others as needed.
When we're purchasing life insurance, a lot of policies have exclusions. What's an exclusion on a life insurance policy? I know suicide can be an exclusion, but what do life insurance companies mean when they say an exclusion?
Yeah. They could, let's say, for example, I've had on a couple of occasions, I've had people, what we call in the business, that are rated. Rated means that the people have looked at your medical records, they've looked at your lifestyle in terms of what you do, whether you smoke, not smoke, whether you've had, a bout with cancer, let's say if you have diabetes. I've had occasions where clients have been rated as smokers 1 year, and the exclusion would be that if you go the next year and stop smoking, that your rating will be increased. You could go up to non-smoker priority. So a lot of times what happens is, let's say, example for cancer. Let's say that somebody had cancer and they have been cancer-free for the last 3 to 5 years. There will be policies that will cover you up to a certain amount as long as the cancer doesn't reoccur. And in fact, after 5 years, that exclusion may go away. But it depends on your health condition. It depends on what you've done in the past. And it depends on how you're faring right now. I've had people with diabetes, if their A1C was higher than 7, the insurance company would rate them. And they would say, we'll give you a year to get your A1C up under 7 and continue with that trend. So there are certain exclusions and certain areas that insurance underwriters will look at and say, okay, we will insure you, but these will be the conditions under which we will insure you. And that's why I say your age and your health are the two most important factors of getting insurance coverage at the level you want it in the way that you want it.
How often, when you have a life insurance policy, should you review your policy?
You should review your policy annually, once a year. And other, Joseph, I have found that if you just take January, for example, go and start in the month of January and look at everything that affects you financially, whether it be your investments, your retirement, your insurance, your beneficiary. Look at everything that affects you financially that are considered your assets, and look at those things and review them and make sure they're doing what you want them to do, you have the coverage that you need, and that you have the beneficiaries on there that you continue to want to have. Most of the time, a year is the best time to evaluate everything. The first of the year, do it in June, do it in December. But pick a time and then stick to that time period and just review. Now, for example, let's take Aretha Franklin, for example. Aretha Franklin has been sick for a number of years before she transitioned. If you are undergoing those kind of conditions, you should be reviewing everything probably every 6 months or every 3 months. You understand that you're sick and you have an illness and you don't know, but you do know that you have a diagnosis that is probably without question that is going to make you transition. You should make sure that everything is in place the way you want it while you are in your right mind, you have health, reasonable health, and that you can make the decision that you want to. Because at some point in time, when you get so unhealthy, you will not be able to make changes or decisions just because they will deem you not in your right mind or healthy enough to make decisions.
A question that on that, if you have, we talked last week about wills. If you have a will and you have a life insurance policy, which trumps the other? If I say my will, I want my son to get all of the all my assets, and I have a life insurance policy, and I say, and I name that life insurance policy, I want my daughter to get all of the assets. Which one trumps the other?
Well, I'm not a lawyer, and so I don't want to pretend to be a lawyer. But from my experience is the beneficiary that is on the insurance policy. It probably could be debated if somebody had a will and they said, I want all my assets to go to my daughter, and she had two kids, and let's say that the only asset she had was an insurance policy, but they looked at the insurance policy. I think it's going to be up to the attorneys within the insurance policy to go by the contract, and an insurance policy is a contract in which they engage the insured by that said, I want the money to go to this particular person. So if it's daughter number one and daughter number two is not on there, I would think that the insurance company is going to pay out the daughter number one. Now, can daughter number two come back and contest that based on the will? It's possible. Any, you know, with attorneys, anything is possible. But I would think the insurance company would pay out to the beneficiary. Joseph, I can't tell you, it happens all the time. Ex-wives get money that a person might not wanted them to get. People put on there that surprise the family members. The beneficiaries, in most cases, if their name is on that particular contract, they are going to be the person that the payout goes to. Because otherwise, they could sue. They could sue that same insurance company. If my name was on there, I should be able to get paid.
One thing that we look at and we always forget about, it's kind of like when you put the will, where is the best place to store your life insurance policy? Because in that chaotic time, nobody knows where everything is at. Where should you store that life insurance policy?
Well, I would suggest to you where not to store it, and that would be in a safe deposit box, which is your name on it. Because a safety deposit box, which is your name on it, is going to be locked down by the bank until they get some notification from a probate court or a probate judge. So I would store, people do have possibly, you know, in-home safes, or they could have it in a fireproof cabinet. But the real key is to let somebody know that you have the policy, somebody that you trust, that you have the policy, and this is where it is. I would say that any important documents, wills, health directives, power of attorneys, insurance policies, beneficiary investments, documents, any of those things should be put in one place along with what I would call a letter of instruction. Letter of instruction is simply that person saying, this is what I would like to happen, along with the will. If they have a trust should be in there. Those are the kind of things that need to be in one place, in a fireproof contraption that they can put it in that somebody other than the person has access to. So therefore, you're going to have to trust somebody to be able to go into a fireproof safe or fireproof cabinet with a lock on it. You're going to be able to have somebody understand, or a couple of people understand that these documents are in here and I put them in here, and if something were to happen to me, please go in there and deliver these to the proper authorities.
What happens if you and have a policy and people, they forget about the policy? You know, old talk, the, you know, 30, 40 years ago, people used to go door to door selling policies. And you, is there anything you can do if you can't, if you say, well, grandma had a policy, but nobody knows where it is? Is there any type of registry or something where you could search to find out if that person had a policy or not?
It's an interesting thing. Probably a lot of insurance money has gone unused. And probably normally what happens is if it's not claimed, it's supposed to go to the state, to that particular state. Let's say the state of Missouri has an unclaimed fund. And a lot of times that's what happens with insurance proceeds. But you really need to know the policy number and the company. Because insurance companies, some of them are little, some of them are small. Insurance companies are owned by other insurance companies because they localize insurance based on name recognition. Sometimes insurance companies are bought by other larger insurance companies, and they just become subsidiaries. However, the name stays the same. I think in the old days, National Life Insurance Company were the people that came by my dad's house and every week on Friday, like clockwork. And the reason I remember is because my mother would be in there cooking fish. And so we would, you know, most of the time we would have fish on Friday, and the insurance man would be walking door to door collecting premiums. And when my father passed, after all those years, I think the policy payout was, one was $250, one was $500. So at that particular case, nobody did needs analysis. In other words, how much coverage did he need and he had five kids? How much coverage did he need and he had a house? How much coverage did he need and he had a wife? But in those times, you had a little, let's say, discrimination going on, and, you know, you had a little redlining going on, and you had a lot of people that were not educated to the level of insurance that they needed. And they were not talking to the right person, so you had those kind of situations that would happen. So to answer your question, you really need a policy number, and you need the name of the insurance company. And from there, you could do a lot of research if you have those type of companies.
Well, let me. I just want to say, so people can search. If they're looking at possibly for lost insurance proceeds, a good place to start would be to search with the Missouri State Secretary of State's office and that lost unclaimed funds file.
I would start there because all you got to do is put the person's name in there. You can go on the website. If it's a relative of yours, you can put the name in there. They'll send you out a form. I think and once you fill out the form and get it notarized, send it back in, then they will reveal to you the level of assets that somebody still may have. Yes.
A couple of quick questions. Does our need for insurance decrease as we get older?
I beg your pardon? What did you say?
As we age and get older, do I need more insurance in my 20s and I would need less insurance by the time I say in my 60s or 70s after I've been established, I save money? So does my need for insurance decrease as we age?
Well, all of that depends on whether or not you gain more assets. As I said before, what you're trying to protect. But in most cases, the younger you are, the only reason that you want maximum level of insurance is because it's cheaper. You can probably get $500,000 and be paying, and if you have good health, non-smoker, you probably will not be paying a whole lot. I can't quote exactly what the number would be, but you will definitely be paying a lower amount than if you're in your 50s, you have some health condition. But in your 50s, you have probably gathered a lot of assets. By that I mean you have that house that needs to be paid off. You probably have children that are 18 to 21 years old. You have possibly a spouse. So you have more that you want to pay off at that period of time, which is why you want to start getting permanent insurance, I would say, a lot earlier, because the premium stays the same even as you get older. So you can have the same level of coverage at a lower amount. As long as you pay either whole life or pay the premium on universal life, you are going to have coverage, permanent coverage.
As we let me interrupt you. As we start, we're winding down and our time is closing down. One quick answer with a quick response. Insuring children, should you have life insurance coverage on your children?
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah. I would say yes. Yes. I mean, most policies have a rider that's pretty expensive.
I'm still here. Go ahead.
Okay. Yeah. Most insurance policies have a rider for kids. So, yeah, that's not a problem.
And I know also one of the things about that is insurability, that if you insure your children now, earlier, you kind of guarantee they can get insurance down the road if they have, if their health changes.
Well, now that depends on the policy. So you have to look at that and read the detail and find out whether or not that is true. Up to a certain age, it probably is. It's either 18 or 21, but at some point in time, they have to have their own insurability.
We've got a caller. Caller, can you tell us your question for David?
Yes, this is a great program, extremely valuable information. I had a suggestion. I lost my mother not too long ago. One of the things, she was very well prepared, but I would suggest that the gentleman hold workshops in churches and also schools, because people to take any action, and it's critical. It's a lot of elderly folks in church. We don't know when they're going to pass, so it's important that they get together with their children with this information, so that they'll be prepared when things happen. So, like I say, great program. Keep up the good work. We got to get it in the churches and the schools.
Thank you so much, caller.
Thank you.
He's absolutely right. Joseph, as you know, I'm trying to do my part in my church, but it's open to the public. We're trying to do as much as we can to spread the word. If I could say one thing, anything related to finance and insurance should not be a secret. Actually, the real key to passing on wealth to the next generation is financial and educational literacy. We have to get more involved in understanding the world around us is a little more complicated than it was with our finance, with insurance. If, in fact, people just understand the concepts, they will be able to make the good decision that they need for themselves and their family.
You teach that financial series class at your church, and I attended your last session. Can you briefly tell our listeners a little bit about it and when your next class may be starting?
Well, that's a good question. And within the next 3 weeks is when the next class will be starting. I got to look at the schedule and find out, but it's a six-week course, and it'll go for 6 weeks. Listen for radio announcements, and Joseph, I'll tell you the exact date, and then you can let your listeners know as well.
Do you have a number where somebody could call you if they wanted to give more information?
Right. They can give me a call at 816-914-6806. That's my number. Or they could call me at my office, 816-373-1068.
I want to thank David for being our guest today and helping us discuss a very important topic that will impact everyone. As he said, all of us will transition. We're never in Cowtown Conversations without our Community Minute. Total Man CDC will be having their annual event this Saturday, September 8th on 31st Street between Benton and Indiana. The event will start at 9 a.m. with a health walk. Come out and find out how you can live a healthier life. Convoy of Hope is coming this Saturday, September 8th at Seven Oaks Park, 3700 Kensington, starting at 10 a.m. Many services will be available for the community, such as job and career services, nutrition, education, health services, haircuts, and more. For more information, go to Convoy of Hope, convoy.org/Kansas City. The 3rd District City Council meeting will be this Monday, September the 10th at 6 p.m. at Great Christ Community Center. They're scheduled to discuss violence in our community. We've had a shooting at the new Sunfresh, and then there was a retaliatory shooting last night. We have to stop the violence. We're killing people innocently, that bullets have no names. Join us next Thursday for our 3rd installment of the series where we discuss funerals with Serenity Memorial Chapels. For Cowtown Conversations, I've been your host, Joseph Jackson. Stay safe, have a great day, and stay tuned for My Place with Larry J.
Think about the heart. for which you was a slave. All I can remember.